Like this morning to turn to the book of Mark, chapter 5, the book of Mark, chapter 5, we'll read verses 21 through verse 24, and then verses 35 through verse 43. Mark 5, begin reading with verse 21 through verse 24. And when Jesus was passed over again by ship unto the other side, much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea. And behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet, and besought him greatly, saying, My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed, and she shall live. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him and thronged him. Verse 35 through verse 43. While he yet spake, there came from the ruler of the synagogue's house certain which said, Thy daughter is dead. Why troublest thou the master any further? As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he saith unto the ruler of the synagogue, Be not afraid, only believe. And he suffered or permitted no man to follow him, save or except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. And he cometh to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and seeth the tumult, and them that wept and wailed greatly. And when he was come in, he saith unto them, Why make ye this ado, and weep? The damsel is not dead, but sleepeth. And they laughed him to scorn. But when he had put them all out, he taketh the father and the mother of the damsel, and them that were with him, and entereth in where the damsel was lying. And he took the damsel by the hand, and said unto her, Talitha cumi, which is being interpreted, Damsel, I say unto thee, arise. And straightway or immediately the damsel arose and walked, for she was of the age of 12 years. And they were astonished with a great astonishment. And he charged them straightly that no man should know it, and commanded that something should be given her to eat. Leading up to what we've just read, I want to notice some background. Back in chapter 4, verses 1 and 2, we see Jesus teaching a multitude of people. He's in a boat, and he's out in the water, of course, and the people are on the shore, and he's teaching them. What he taught is recorded in verses 3 through verse 33, and we see that he taught them in parables. Following this, in verses 35 through 41 of chapter 4, we see in verse 35, and the same day when the evening was come. So he's been teaching throughout the day, and it's now evening. He saith unto them, Let us pass over unto the other side, this being the disciples. And then verses from there to verse 41, we see Jesus and the disciples crossing the Sea of Galilee. And in chapter 5 and verse 1, and they came over to the side of the sea, to the other side of the sea, unto the country of the Gadarenes. So now they arrive into the country of the Gadarenes. It was there that Jesus delivered a man from the awful bondage of demons. That's recorded in verses 2 through 20 of chapter 5. Which brings us to our text, the opening verse of our text in verse 21. And when Jesus was passed over again. So now Jesus has crossed back over to the other side. By ship unto the other side, much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea. And what we read here in these verses is Mark's account of Jesus raising from the dead a 12-year-old girl. Matthew and Luke also record the event, and the miracle, of course, is a manifestation of Christ's compassion. It's a manifestation of Christ's power, and it serves as an encouragement for all of God's people to put their faith and put their trust in Christ. However, in this message, we are not going to concern ourselves with the miracle. We want to concern ourselves with the father of this young girl. His name is Jairus. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all draw our attention to this man. Matthew says in Matthew 9, verse 18, "Behold, there came a certain ruler." We read in our text here in Mark chapter 5, verse 22, "And behold," again drawing our attention to something, "there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name." And Luke says, "Behold, there came a man named Jairus." In our text, we see a father named Jairus. And there are some excellent qualities about this man that we want to notice. Here is a man who demonstrated by example the love of a father. We want to use him as a model. He's not a perfect model. The model of perfect fatherhood is God. His love, his guidance, his discipline of his children are the perfect pattern. There are no perfect fathers. There are no perfect mothers. But I want to tell you something. Your children do not need a perfect father. They don't need a perfect mother. What they do need is for you to be a godly man. That they need. They don't need you to be perfect, but they need you to be godly. And we're going to speak this morning on the fathers we need today, using Jairus as a model. In the last 40 to 50 years, most TV sitcoms, there have been a few exceptions, not that I watch a whole lot of TV sitcoms, but most TV sitcoms have cast the father as the family idiot. I mean, that's been going on for a long time. And sadly, many men and women and children have bought into that idea. And sadly, some fathers promote the idea. And sadly, our society seems to see fathers as expendable parts of the family unit. And tragically, many men today have failed to see the importance of their role as a man and a father. Families and homes are in great, great danger today. I don't know that they've ever been in greater danger. They certainly haven't in our lifetimes. And in a society and culture that is atheistic and immoral and permissive, in a society and culture that is evil in its thinking, evil in its ways, evil in its speech, evil in its pursuits, and a society and culture that is defined by filthiness, defined by wickedness, defined by ungodliness and that which is abominable, in a society and culture that is absolutely saturated with disrespect toward God and disrespect toward the ways of God, and in a society and culture where most have very lovingly embraced the agendas and the programs of Satan, in such a society, the home is in great danger. And we stand in desperate need of fathers who possess the qualities that Jairus exemplified in our text. Such are a rarity today. Just as we read in Proverbs 31, who can find a virtuous woman? She's rare. The same applies to the man. It's a rarity. Psalm 12 in verse 1, we see this rarity. The psalmist prayed, "Help, Lord, the godly man ceaseth." How true. How true. And a question is asked in Proverbs 20 verse 6, which goes along with who can find a virtuous woman. Proverbs 20 and verse 6, but a faithful man, who can find? In other words, these scriptures reveal the rarity of godly men. But wherever they are found, and thank God they can be found, wherever they are found, like the virtuous woman, they're not perfect, but they're a treasure. And their blessing. Again, we want to take notice of some qualities that we find in this man, Jairus. And though we have fathers in mind, what we see here applies to each of God's people and are things that each one of us ought to strive after. And I believe it's important that we recognize and keep in mind throughout the message the position and the responsibility of Jairus. In our text, in verse 22, he is referred to as one of the rulers of the synagogue. Matthew, in Matthew 9 and verse 18, refers to him as a certain ruler. And Luke, in Luke 8, verse 41, refers to him as a ruler of the synagogue. From all of this, we see that he was a man with a high social position. He was a man known among the people. He was a man of prestige. He was a man of power. He was a man of influence. From all of this, we see that he was a man who had responsibilities outside of his home. And that's true of all of us. And so we need to keep this in mind. Here is a man who has responsibilities outside of the home. But it is important that we keep in mind as we look at this man's qualities, that his responsibilities outside of the home did not prevent him from possessing these qualities, nor should it us. So I want to notice several things. First of all, he loved his family, and he was aware of their needs. Hear him in verse 23, "My little daughter." My little daughter. Later on, we're told that she's 12 years old. But in those three words, "my little daughter," there's love in those words. You see, a sickness had come into the house of Jairus. And as a result of the sickness, the threat of death was in that home. Again, notice verse 23. "My little daughter lieth at the point of death." Matthew, in his account, in Matthew 9, verse 18, said, "My daughter is even now dead." Well, she hadn't died yet. But what he was saying there was, she's as good as dead. There's nothing we can do. Death was imminent. And Luke says in Luke 8:42, "she lay a-dying." So death, like a cloud, was hanging over that home. There was the threat of something that would completely disrupt that household. The threat of death. Jairus was alert and fully aware of the sickness that had come into his home. And he was fully aware of the threat that it presented. He was alert to and aware of the need of his daughter. And may I say, there is a sickness that has come into many homes, far, far more serious than any physical sickness. And as a result, there is a threat far more dangerous, far more consequential than physical death. In many homes, this threat of death hangs over homes. And we need fathers today who are aware of the real need. He realized that his daughter was sick, that she was dying. He did not misidentify the real need. The devil is an expert at getting you and I to misidentify the real problem and the real need. We need fathers who do not misidentify the real problem and who do not misidentify the real need. Such was the case with Jairus. Secondly, he was greatly burdened concerning the need of his daughter. Again in verse 23, "My little daughter lieth at the point of death." There is great burden. There is great stress in those words. "My little daughter lieth at the point of death." So there is his daughter that he no doubt loved and cherished. And she's so sick that there is the threat of death. And the need of his daughter caused him to feel an inner disturbance, caused a pain within his soul. Again, there is a sickness that has come into many homes, far more serious than any physical sickness. And it is a sickness that ought to cause us a great inner disturbance, a great pain of soul. And as a result of this sickness, there is a threat more dangerous than physical death. There is a threat far more consequential than physical death that hangs over many homes. And unless God intervenes, it's inevitable. It's inevitable. Oh, how we need fathers today who identify, who are aware of the real need, and who are truly burdened over the real needs. Thirdly, having this burden, he sought Christ. Recognizing the need of his daughter, fully aware of the threat to his family, and feeling a heavy burden of soul, he felt a compulsion. He felt a stirring from God to seek Jesus Christ. He did not send his wife. She stayed back home. He did not send his servant. Being a ruler of the synagogue, he had servants. He did not send his wife. He did not send his servant. But he made a deliberate choice to seek Christ personally. He made a deliberate choice to leave where he was and to put off all that he had to do to seek Christ on behalf of his daughter. Those are the fathers that we need. Recognizing his daughter's need, realizing the threat that was hanging over his home, seeking Jesus Christ became a priority. It became the business of his day. Whatever he had to do that day, and I'm sure there was plenty, this was now the business of the day. I have to seek Christ. Jairus was willing to sacrifice everything to seek Jesus Christ. Due to the rising opposition that Jesus was facing, to seek Christ, Jairus was risking his place, his position, his status in the community just by seeking Christ. He was risking all of that. But he was willing to seek Christ on behalf of his daughter at all cost to himself. And he was not ashamed for everyone to know that he was seeking Christ. Was not ashamed of that. Because of the opposition that Christ was facing from the religious world, it took courage for a ruler of the synagogue to personally and visibly seek Christ. Why did he seek Christ? Well, we could mention several reasons, but we want to say this. He knew that Jesus Christ was the only hope that he had. He knew that Jesus Christ was what was best for his family. And it is time that some people wake up and realize what is best for their family. It's not the physical. It's not the material. It's always the spiritual. Wake up! He realized that Jesus Christ was what was best for his family. And therefore, he was willing to sacrifice everything else. He sought Christ with a heavy burden of soul. Again, notice verse 23. And besought him greatly. And besought him greatly. And then as you read on a little further, it says, I pray thee. There he is. He's now in the presence of Christ. He's pleading. He's begging. He's praying that Christ would come. Again, there is a sickness far more serious than any physical sickness. And as a result, there is a threat far more dangerous, far more consequential than physical death that hangs over many homes. And oh, how we need fathers today who are so burdened that seeking Christ is a priority. I mean, if your home is under siege by the forces of hell, and that doesn't cause Christ to be a priority, you're almost hopeless. I mean, what's it going to take? What's it going to take? He loved his daughter so deeply and cherished her to such an extent that he sought Christ on her behalf. It is love that will cause an individual to seek Christ on behalf of another. Here is a someone who had a great need. She's sick. She's dying. Well, I'll go out and buy her something that makes her feel good. Is that what she needs? No. She needs Christ. So he's pleading with Christ. Love is more than a closet full of toys. It's more than a drawer full of clothes. It's seeking Christ on their behalf. Notice in the book of Job, keep a mark there in the book of Mark, but in the book of Job, chapter 1, we see Job was a man who sought the Lord on behalf of his grown children. Verse 5 it says, "And it was so when the days of their feasting were gone about that Job sent and sanctified them and rose up early in the morning and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all, 10, 7 sons, 3 daughters. For Job said, it may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus did Job continually." Got up early in the morning and prayed for who? His children. We're to pray for one another. We ought to pray for one another. We ought to do so every day. But it doesn't say much if you can pray for others and can't pray for your children. That doesn't put you in a very good light at all. Oh, I love my children. Do you love them enough to pray? Do you love them enough to pray for them every single day? It's what Job did. We see this is what Jairus is doing now. Fourthly, in seeking Christ, Jairus put himself at the disposal of Christ. Notice verse 22, he fell at his feet. That's the position of a dependent. Jairus so burdened that he takes the place of an absolute dependent. The place of the lowest of servants. A place of absolute humility. A place of surrender. The place of recognized need and helplessness. And he was not ashamed to take his place at Jesus' feet. He was not ashamed to be seen at the feet of Jesus Christ. And there at the feet of Jesus Christ, he pleaded, and he besought him greatly. Instead of trying to handle everything on his own, instead of trying to fix everything, he was pleading with Christ. Your children, believe it or not, do not need you to fix everything. You know, every now and then someone will make the statement, well, that's what moms do, that's what dads do, we just fix things for our kids. There's something flawed in that thinking. That's not your job, to fix everything in your child's life. I've got news for you. There's going to come some things that you can't fix. It's not your job to fix everything. It is your job to take them to the Lord in prayer. And that's what Jairus did. Instead of trying to fix everything, we need to spend some time at the feet of Christ for them. Again, there's a sickness that has come into many homes far more serious than any physical sickness. And as a result, there is a threat far more dangerous and far more consequential than even the threat of physical death. Oh, how we need some fathers who will spend time at Jesus' feet. Fifthly, and seeking Christ, he worshipped him. Matthew, in his account in chapter 9 and verse 18, records, "Behold, there came a certain ruler and worshipped him." That's what he's doing there at the feet of Jesus Christ. So Jairus is not simply trying to obtain something from Christ. But when he got into the presence of Christ, he fell at his feet. In other words, he came under the power and influence of who Jesus was. And we need some fathers who have come under the power and influence of who Christ is. And there he is, worshiping Christ. In this day when the forces of hell have aligned themselves against your home, and there's not a home that that's not true of, we don't need to be under the influence and the sway of this world. We need to be under the influence and sway of Jesus Christ. Sixthly, in seeking Christ, he believed. Notice again verse 23. "I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed, and she shall live." He was absolutely certain that what his daughter needed was the touch of Jesus Christ. "Come and lay thy hands on her." What's he praying? Is he not praying that Christ would intervene in his daughter's life? All through the Scriptures, we see the touch of the Lord. We see it as a touch that brings restoration. There's emancipation in that touch. There's cleansing. There's help. It is a touch that brings submission. In that touch we find strength. In the simple touch of the Lord, blind eyes were restored to sight. There's great comfort in the touch of the Lord. There's great joy. And Jairus believed that there was power in the touch of the Lord. "Come, lay thy hands upon her that she may be healed, and she shall live." Jairus knew that he could not restore his daughter, but he knew one who could. So he went to him. And that is true today also. You see, the miracle you need, and all of us need miracles, the miracle you need is as easy as a touch from the Lord. And that's why Jairus is praying, "Lord, come. Lay thy hands upon her." He knew that Christ was able. He believed that Christ was greater than the sickness. He believed that Christ was greater than the death that threatened to take his daughter's life away. He believed. And in this day, we need fathers who believe and are absolutely persuaded. Believe so much and are persuaded to such a degree that they seek Christ at all costs. Seventhly, he walked with Christ. Notice verse 24. "And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him and thronged him." And Jesus went with him. We need fathers that is true of today. And Jesus went with him. Jairus and Christ are now walking together toward the house of Jairus. Here's a ruler of a synagogue, unashamed, to be seen with Christ. They're walking together. What a beautiful picture. This walk proved to be very beneficial to Jairus. Because we read in verses 25 through 34, as they were on their way to the house, their journey was interrupted by a woman who had a flow of blood for 12 years. And Jairus witnessed Christ healing that woman. And you'll witness and experience a lot of things walking with Christ that you will not witness and experience anywhere else. And walking with Christ, Jairus would find the strength that he needed, because news came in verse 35 from the house, "Thy daughter is dead. Why troublest thou the master any further?" Christ immediately said, "Jairus, just keep on believing." You see, Jairus walking with Christ was in a position to be encouraged by Christ. You know why many today are not encouraged? Because they're not in a position to be encouraged. You walk with Jesus Christ, and you are now in a position, even when the news comes, "Thy daughter is dead," you are in a position to be encouraged because you're walking with Jesus Christ. In this day of atheism and immorality and permissiveness and rebellion, and when the forces of hell have unleashed their fury against the home, oh, how we need some fathers who will walk with Christ. Lastly, he brought Christ into his home. First of all, he wanted Christ in his house. I guess that's where we need to stop and be honest. Do we want Christ in our house? Consider, Christ in your house may turn your house upside down. There may be some things that have to go. Jairus wanted Christ in his house. He prayed in verse 23, "Come." He said, "Come." He wanted Christ in his house. He invited Christ in his house because he knew that's what his home needed above anything else, was the presence of Christ. So he invited the King of Glory to come in. In verse 38, "And he cometh to the house of the ruler of the synagogue." Notice he came to the house. And I believe this draws a picture, "And he seeth the tumult and them that wept and wailed greatly." If you go to a house, depending on the season, of course, the weather, and someone has just passed in that house, people have gathered, you'll usually find when you pull up in the driveway, there's a group of people outside. And they're doing what these people were doing. They're weeping. And I see Jesus coming to the house, and there's this group of people outside. But then notice in verse 39, "And when he was come in," now he's in the house. Now he's in the house. Big difference, Jesus being at your house and Jesus being in your house. There were some others in the house also. They also were weeping. He said, "Why make ye this ado and weep? The damsel is not dead, but sleepeth." Then notice, he put some out. "And they laughed him to scorn," verse 40. "But when he had put them all out," those who laughed, he puts them out. Jesus comes to your house, there's some things that are going to be put out. Guaranteed. When he said, these need to go, Jairus did not argue. Jairus did not question. He was fully submitted to Christ. When Christ says this has to go, it has to go. Christ had authority in that home now. Notice verse 40. But when he put them all out, he taketh. He taketh the father and the mother of the damsel, and them that were with him, some of the apostles, and they entered in where the damsel was lying. Jesus is in the house, and he taketh the father and the mother, took them aside. They are now feeling the nearness of Christ. He taketh the father and the mother. Verse 41, verse 40, the latter part of the verse, it says that he took them into the room where the girl was lying. He touched her, took her by the hand. He spoke, and straightway the damsel arose. Not only was life imparted, but it was manifest. She arose, she walked, and if you look down in verse 43, she ate. She manifested life. We need Christ in our homes. We need the life that Christ imparts in our homes. And when he imparts that life, it'll be manifest. And notice, the parents were all struck, and they were astonished, with great astonishment. Who brought Christ into this home? Jairus did. Jairus brought Christ into his home. The result is some things were put out. The result is there were a miracle that left them awestruck. And in this day, when the forces of hell have unleashed their fury against the home, we need fathers who recognize the need of Christ in their home. We need fathers who desire for Christ to be in their home. We need fathers who invite Christ into their home. And we need fathers who bring Christ into their home. I'm going to say something. I want to explain it. I believe that homes should have rules. I believe that homes should have very strict rules. I don't know that you can be too strict. But I want to say this. No amount of rules will replace Christ in your home. None. You can say, we've had all these rules. It's good to have rules. Not opposed to rules. Don't you ever think that that will replace Christ in your home. Because it won't. There's nothing that can replace this. And who was it that brought him in? Jairus. Brought Christ into his home. Jesus said in John 10 and verse 10, the thief cometh not but for to steal and to kill and to destroy. That's real. There's a thief. And he desires to steal, to kill, and to destroy the minds, the bodies, the souls of your children. This is a war. This is a war far more serious than a war against terror. This is a war. This is real. And there is something at stake greater than land, greater than freedom. Children, we're at a war. It's real. There's a thief. Some have opened the door and let him come in and live there. And they have kicked Christ out. This is real. And we need fathers who are aware that there is a war. We need fathers who are aware of the real needs of their home and who are so burdened concerning those needs that they're going to seek Christ. They're going to place themselves at the disposal of Christ. They're going to worship Christ. They're going to believe Christ. They're going to walk with Christ. They're going to bring Christ home with them. This is what we need. Nothing else will do. Well, we'll bring him to church once a week and that'll fix it. That won't fix anything. You bring him to church once a week and allow the devil in your house every day, I'm sorry, but you've undone everything. Wake up. There is a call today. It is a call that goes forth from God. It is a call to commitment. It is a call to surrender. To commit and surrender ourselves to the government, to the will, to the ways, and to the interest of God. It is a call to be engaged and occupied in the business of the Lord. Oh, that some would hear the call. It is a call to align ourselves with God. It is a call to attach ourselves to God. It is a call to prefer God above all. It is a call to esteem God and His will above all else. It is a call for God to be the resolve and the purpose and the object and the aim and the passion of our lives. It is a call for you and I to be gripped by God, to glorify God, to show forth God in our walk, to be holy, to walk with God, to please God. And oh, how desperately we need. All of us need this. But how desperately we need some men who will stand and say without hesitation, without any timidness whatsoever, and with great resolve and with great purpose, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord no matter what it costs. We will serve God. Nothing is going to get in the way. We're going to serve Him. This is what we need today. Oh, that God would get a hold of each one of us. Because again, we said, though we're singling out fathers, men, this applies to everybody. We all need to be seeking Christ. We all need to be doing these things. We need to wake up and realize what is at stake. We need to... How can anybody just wash their hands of their children? How can anybody just throw up their hands and say, oh well, that's the way it is? How can you do that? That's unnatural affection. How can you just hand them over to the devil? How can you do that? How can you not go and fall at the feet of Christ and plead for them? This is what we need.
Well, I'm trying to fix it. You don't have to fix it. Wake up. You're wasting your energies in an effort of futility. Spend your energy at the feet of Christ, praying and pleading. He can fix it. He can fix it. We need to believe that. We need to believe that. And more importantly, we need to practice that. Bring your family to the Lord. There isn't a home here. There isn't a family represented here today that does not have great needs. There is not anyone here that should not have great concern for your family. We're all in the same boat to a degree when it comes to our homes, when it comes to our family. And I believe we have a good example in Jairus. Is he the perfect example? No. But again, I stress, your children don't need a perfect father. They don't need a perfect mother. There are none. They don't exist. What they need is moms and dads who will go to the Lord on their behalf and plead with them. And let them know, I'm praying for you. I'm praying for. I can remember as plain as day, my grandmother, I say every day, I know it wasn't every day, Danny, I'm praying for you. Danny, I'm praying for you. And I believe she was. Meant nothing to me at the time. Absolutely nothing. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But it means a lot now. It means a lot now. Children need to know. It may mean nothing to them. But I hope and pray that they know Mom and Dad will always be praying. They need to know that. Brother Mark, if you'd come and lead us verse of song.